Do you ever wonder where your food comes from? That's what got us started on this adventure.
We talk to everyone we can to answer the question, what makes the Comox Valley food scene so special? Join us on our culinary exploration of this edible valley.
All right. Well, welcome to another episode of the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm chef and host Jonathan Fraser.
And I'm Darren Howlett, your co-host.
And I'm William Stringer, the producer.
The producer.
Producer.
Producing the show.
Hey, I'm the producer. I don't know what that was.
That's a good opening. We do good openings.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Okay. So what are we talking about today?
For one, I'm surprised that we're keeping this intro. We generally would re-record that, something like that, but that's...
Live with it.
Okay.
This is the new reality. Yeah,
so we were talking pretty informal. We have a lot that we want to talk about, and we decided that there's way too much to talk about in one episode, so we're going to touch on some points, and we're going to ask you to tell us what you want to hear more about after. But here's something that John and I rarely talk about, digging in from our vast wells of knowledge that we never really share, and it seems like it's time to start sharing that kind of stuff.
Yes, so we want to talk about, so you want to be a food entrepreneur,
right?
Which, what are we talking about, Darren?
We wanted to talk about food entrepreneur differentiated, say, from restaurateur, which a lot of people would think are the same thing. But we're talking broader, because we're not talking about just opening restaurants or little eateries or whatever. We're talking about everything in the food industry, really.
Well, I think some of the things that we've done over the years, because we have quite a bit of a background in the food business, different aspects of it. And so I was thinking about this one, is that really a food entrepreneur is anyone who's in the food industry. So I'm thinking farmers to start, like the first people that are pulling those carrots out of the ground, or, you know, growing chickens, pigs, cows, all that fun stuff, to the, you know, the people who are to the end of the line, which is the restaurateur or the caterer or anyone that's like
somebody that's making a packaged product,
putting the food on your plate or on your table, or getting it to that point. So there's lots of in between there. So so talking about producers, talking about chefs, I even think about talking about bartending and food trucks and caterers.
For sure. One thing I think that I'm looking forward to when we talked about doing this episode was we really hum and haw about sharing secrets and names about the places that we've worked, because we don't want to offend anyone or implicate anybody in any negative way or anything. But I think that that's one of the things about this episode, is we kind of have to name names. We have to really sort of dig into actual histories of things that we've done, accomplishments and failures that we've both made along the way.
Both have lots of failures, because I don't think you get into the food industry without having a few failures.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a rite of passage.
It is. Yeah. You, even though I think I've done really well in my career, I have a huge amount of failures in it.
You have a very admirable career. I don't know why you would say, I mean, I can see a couple steps maybe that maybe didn't turn out the way you wanted them to, but even those, I don't see, like, looking at your career, I don't see those as failures. Right. I just see them as side projects that maybe could have gone different ways.
Thanks, Darren. I feel the same way about you.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
I think this is great. We get to talk about one of your favorite things.
What?
Come on, Will.
Go on. It needs to come out. Come on. What did you used to do?
You guys are jerks. Do you know that I never talk about this anymore, except for if you guys bring it up?
We need to get a t-shirt saying, I used to own a bar.
I know.
You used to own a bar? I did too.
You used to own a bar. Now, you see, this is the difference. I haven't failed at anything, but I also haven't done anything.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Okay, how about this? How about we run over a quick detailing of what we've done in this regard. So I will talk about, or I'm open to talking about the fact that, yes, I owned a bar, but before that I managed two different bars, and I managed a restaurant. Mm-hmm. That was in my 20s, my early 20s. And then
you had family in restaurants too. So you had
I grew up in a restaurant when I was really little. And then So after the bar, I started a food truck.
Right.
And after the food truck, that sort of turned into a catering.
Right.
And then you and I bought into Prontissima. Yeah. At one point.
I had a great moment the other day in the restaurant where someone was like, do you use Durum?
Oh, yeah.
In the pasta? I'm like, actually, yes, we do. And I know that because I used to own it and I used to buy it.
Yeah, yeah. We used to get it in, what were those, 50-pound bags?
That's right.
Get a pallet of those. God, that was heavy. But what else? There was something else I'm forgetting. But there's another business in there that I feel that I'm kind of pertinent to talk about, the fact that, you know, started from scratch or bought an existing business and continued it going.
Yeah. You did help me scoop ice cream, too, for a while.
Oh, yeah, there was a moment where you were scooping. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's got a, yeah, you got a full rounded.
I mean, I've had other businesses outside of this, too. That's probably what I'm thinking of. I have got other things going other than food. But yeah,
you are an entrepreneur.
Yeah, for sure.
You like to push the envelope.
Yeah, I would absolutely 100% agree with you. I'm an entrepreneur. That doesn't mean I'm successful, but that is what I am.
And that's not what being an entrepreneur always is. It's like having that creative. I think that's, you know, the tips to success, what we'll get into in a bit.
Sure. But yeah, let's talk about yours, mate.
So yeah, no, like I feel like I've always been in food industry all my life. And a lot of it came from just growing up in my household. My father liked to throw on, not big parties, but like, he liked to cook and he liked to make meals for everyone. So it's always been a thing of mine that I've always been helping in the kitchen or setting the table. And as a kid, I was making Caesar salad in front of our friends and guests and stuff like that. So my dad would get a cart and we'd wheel it out there. And we cut up the lettuce and mix the dressing and then toss it. So it was, you know, table side.
I used to work at Gourmet by the Sea and we had to make all the Caesar salads at the table.
Yeah.
That was Will,
have you ever done that?
Did you ever make Caesar salads? They didn't trust me to do. I worked at Shea Piggy in Kingston, Ontario, and they didn't trust me to do salad and everything like that.
Oh, yeah.
When they met me, they wanted to put me on the grill because they thought I was intelligent in that way. big mistake. And then I was on prep.
Right. Yeah.
I'm a very good oyster shucker now. But no, I never made the salads.
Huh. Well, I mean, Will was my helper. I guess you were too. When we did the emergency food kitchen for Lush Valley.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah.
Good times.
Will was a great scooper.
We weren't doing much oyster shucking there, but
no oyster shucking.
Play to his strengths next time, John.
Yeah. Okay, where were we at? We're talking about my resume, and I'm jumping all over the place. So of course, I got a job at the Kingfisher Inn, which was great for me, and I got great mentorship there.
Yeah,
with Lucas D. Fodder, who actually to this day is the one who pushed me to go into locals and suggested that
that's awesome.
That's where I should be going in my career, and it's nice to still see him drop by and be like, check on me and see how things are going. And I know he's always checking in on Ronald as well, to see how he's doing it. So it's nice to have that mentor, you know, in your career. So that's probably a good key to success too. We should add there, talk about mentors. So I did my career at the Kingfisher Inn and I got to work all the way through there. Then I thought some crazy thing that I'd moved down to the big city of Victoria. and check it out. And I bounced around. I got to work at the Chateau Victoria. I worked on a charter boat, which really opened my eyes up to like the West Coast and what local foods and what things we have in our oceans that I can work with and be more connected to my food than just getting it through a distributor or getting it through, you know, some guy showing up and being like, I've got this. Yeah. It's in a box, you know, like going to the grocery store. So it was actually seeing where my food and finding out the story behind my food, which has always been a huge success to my career, I think. And then I got a phone call to go to the Atlas or if I was interested in coming to the Atlas, and that took up 13 years of my life.
Yeah.
And it was a great adventure.
For sure.
And had lots of successes and lots of failures. And I learned a lot of things. And then I opened an ice cream shop. And in the middle there, I forgot. Yeah, we opened a pasta.
We had the pasta place.
Bought into the pasta place because we wanted to build that medium section in the food market to be in the middle.
Yeah.
To be the guy producing and shipping it to the restaurants and getting one step out. And
Yeah, and I mean, really, we can talk about it too. That that was what, I mean, we were planning on expanding Edible Valley that way to start into food production. Yeah, and that's sort of buying Prontissimo was the beginning of that.
Yeah, and then we realized that was a lot of work. And yeah, running a restaurant and doing a lot of work and doing surviving and
yeah, toy
companies and all that stuff was a lot.
Yeah.
And then what? Yeah. Then I opened the ice cream shop and now I'm at Local. So it's been a full circle and I'm enjoying it and I'm still learning. Like, it's a constant learn, especially right now is even more challenging when we got COVID going on. So
no kidding.
All of a sudden it's a little more, it's a little slower.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a little bit different how you react to thing and trying to figure out what your customer wants and understanding what your customer is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. I mean, there's our track record. That's what gets us here. What about you, Will?
How did you get into food? Before you start clapping and resetting this.
No cuts here. Straight into the good stuff.
Yeah.
I actually, in all honesty, I was living and working in London and in a sales job that I hated. I was utterly miserable. And my thinking was I was happy when I had restaurant jobs in university. So I thought I'm going to move back to Devon and get a job in a restaurant and find my way back to happiness from there.
Right.
And I wanted something that had a bit more soul to it. So putting, in the restaurant industry, we complain a lot about certain things because nothing's perfect. But, you know, it's always important for me to remember why I went into the restaurant industry. I had to put on a suit every day and go to a not particularly nice area of London, just
right,
bog standard high-rise buildings, and go into an air-conditioned office and just work in front of a computer all day every day. And I thought I was going to go crazy.
Yeah.
I was, on the face of it, I was this really reasonably successful person, and then I would go up to this vacant floor above and cry on the phone to my mum because right, I was trapped.
Yeah.
And suddenly I got to go back into a place where you could be around friends and enjoy yourself and be around something real.
Yeah.
And it was that realness that I really loved.
I tried a few times to move away from the food industry, but I've always found that it's completely centered around something that I love, and B, most of the other people there are also completely into what the job is about. But further than that, it had the flexibility, and I needed things that had flexibility. I couldn't do the grind, the 9 to 5 every day in the same office. I needed things to be different all the time.
Yeah.
And that those are the alluring parts of the food industry for me. So that's what keeps drawing me back. Every time I try to walk away and say, I'm going to go do this now, I'm going to go do that now, I keep coming back to the food industry in some capacity because just that culture. So,
yeah. Mm. But I mean, yeah. I've never been a food entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
You both were talking about having started businesses and failed at things. And I'm a really strong advocate of failing forward, just going for it. And if you've failed at things, good job, keep on going.
Yeah.
There's three things you can do. You can try and succeed, you can try and fail, or you can not try. Not trying is at the bottom of that.
Right.
If you've tried and failed, good job. Do it again, you might fail again, but just keep on going. And I'm not saying I've never tried. I don't think go forward on my own in anything in the food industry, because I think I would always be around people like you that know about this thing. But it's definitely a great thing to just get a passion for something and go forward. And the final thing I'd say about that is in food, it's one of those jobs that you're actually putting a good thing into the world, because you're providing something that someone really loves and it makes someone happy, and you're putting a bit of happiness into the world. There are so many jobs, I won't go down that rabbit hole, where you're not actually making the world a better place. You might be a perfectly good person, but you're not making the world a better place. You're
capitalizing on it or something.
Exactly. Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. But you're actually making the world a little bit better by working with farmers, by putting food in people's bellies that's making them happy.
Agreed.
It's a great thing.
Agreed.
Yeah. Or maybe giving them an excuse to complain about something.
Yeah. But yeah.
I feel like there's a balance there.
Yes.
I feel there's some people who come into a restaurant that just want to be like, I could do better at my house.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for hurting my feelings.
But yeah, you had mentioned about the trying and failing, or not trying, trying and failing and trying and succeed. And that sort of brings us back to here, where we were trying to talk about. So what sort of things can we try to do for success? Or what sort of things do we need to keep in mind, John?
Are we talking about tips for success?
Yeah.
Or how better, about, better, wait, I got this one. A recipe for success.
Hey, nice. Yes. I don't know, maybe that's on it. We'll see.
Did you see me fire off on that one? Yeah. Okay, sorry.
I apologize. You know what? No, that's all right. Like, John's got a couple of notes he wants to bring up, and I might throw a couple of points where that pertained to some of the businesses that I started, because I've both bought businesses that existed and I've started businesses from scratch.
Yeah. Well,
and they're very different in regardless of what they are.
Right.
But
well, and here's the thing is like, it's having that idea.
Yeah.
And what that idea is going to be, and that idea is going to change, and you have to be flexible for that.
I think that is one of the key things about being an entrepreneur is immediately, as soon as you have decided that this is what you want to do, be ready for it to not be that, because flexibility and being willing to change is so important. You may come up with a fantastic idea and nobody around cares. So you need to be able to adjust that.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Or you might have the perfect food item that you want to put on your menu and people aren't responding to it. But if you just adjusted it this way or that way, like flexibility is the key to success, because if you are so tunnel visioned that the exact thing that you want to do is the only thing you'll accept, I guarantee you'll fail.
Well, this is what I want this to reenact this for you. This is every business plan I've ever written a year afterwards.
Yeah, pretty much. Exactly. And that, but that doesn't mean that you don't do them. You don't.
No.
You still have to have a business plan because you have to have a starting point to deviate from. You just can't. You can't just go willy nilly, no plan. You have to have a plan. You just have to be willing to accept and let go that at some point you're going to go a bit off the rails.
Yeah, well, exactly. And you know what? It's so interesting to go through and do a business plan. Mm-hmm. I actually didn't even write about a business plan. This is just come straight up. But it, like for me, the couple that I've written over the years, it's been like, this is my idea. This is my dream.
Yeah.
And then just to put it down on paper so you can actually see it.
Yeah,
and then go, okay, well, how is this going to work? And then hitting the finances. And that's what because those are the things, every time you do finances and you go expenses, there's going to be more expenses that you have no idea about that are just going to pop up out of the blue. And you'll be like, you're not going to realize that you're going to be spending $100 a month on envelopes. Like,
yeah, you're right. Or whatever.
Or whatever, you know, like certain things that you're like, so it's just going through there and then spitballing and just being like, well, even then you look at, I mean, I've done it a dozen times where I've been like, okay, so I'll pay someone, you know, $10 an hour. Not that I would pay under minimum wage. I'm just using that as an example. But then you don't take into consideration that, you know, you've got to pay for the, you know, CPP. Mm-hmm. You have to pay for all these other little, you know.
That $14 an hour that you think you're paying somebody, you're actually paying them $20 an hour.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so taking those into account when you're doing your business plan and stuff like that. Those are the numbers that you don't always think about. And so it's just putting them into a plan.
Oh my God.
Looking at them and going,
whoa. I can write a book on all the numbers you're not thinking about.
Yeah. I mean, I think I have a saying that I actually made up, and I'm sure it already exists. But I say it quite a lot. If you don't write it down, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And I mean on paper. Mm-hmm. I don't mean somewhere on a hard drive that you're never going to look at it. On paper. Pencil, pen, paper. Yeah. Put it somewhere where you're going to see it all the time. If you don't do that, it doesn't exist. And I would put to you that's the reason for a business plan.
Yeah.
Because you see it and then it becomes a living thing that exists.
Exactly. So just really briefly, if I write something down, rather than think of it as a thought, I can forget a thought. I can jot something down on the computer and it's there. But once I've written it down, whenever I think of that, I think of how I visualize how I wrote that down on the piece of paper. it comes to me. I'm just saying, like, the memory is more readily available to me. Mm. It jumps to me, and my handwriting, my whatever, it becomes, everything becomes more tangible and more real.
Yeah, I mean, this is not I'm about to say something. This isn't a spiritual thing, no. A spiritual podcast. But I have noticed, I'm not a writer. I don't. Mm. You are definitely a writer, Darren. You love writing things, and that's your passion. You're very, very good at it. I don't. It bores me to write things, but I have noticed that when you write something down, there is a power to it. I seem to do it more if it's written down, and it seems to keep on coming back to me. And actually, whatever I write down tends to be realized.
Yeah.
So I write things down more and more. It just tends to be the easiest way of doing
which,
things.
I doubling back to what you're saying, I think that's exactly why you need to make a business plan. But also usually it's to appease whoever's financing it to make sure that you've put thought into what you're proposing.
I'm a big fan of word bubbles.
Yeah.
You've seen me do
them. I'm laughing because John has done tons of them over the years where
I'll be like, with the podcast here, I'm like,
what's a word bubble?
So I'll do write down in the middle of a page, Edible Valley, and I'll circle it.
Sorry, a keyword, yeah.
And then that goes into podcasts.
Oh, spider diagram.
Right. Is that what it's called? Right.
Yeah. So yeah, so he'll have 20, whatever that idea, it spawns 20 sub ideas. Maybe it spawns 4. Mm. But then, and then each one of those. And it's sort of like John looking at the whole picture at once, or it's like he's frantically getting the entire idea down all at once when I watch him do it. I've seen him do it a couple times where it's like, because that branch will all of a sudden, he'll be like, oh, and there's this and this and this. But then down here, he's like, oh, no, and then there's this and this. And then those things keep branching. And yeah, it's great to watch you come up with that fully, all the things all at once.
Because my mind goes in like 17 directions and I have very hard time focusing in one direction. So that works for me. And then it's taking that and then breaking that down backwards and going, okay.
Well, how do we get there?
Yeah, that sounds really good, but that's really expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
Scratch, scratch, scratch. Or, oh, that's a great idea, and that's easy to do. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So anyway, that's a business plan is a great way to start. But I think the one thing you should really have about this and really consider is having passion for what you're doing.
Yeah.
Really believe in what you're doing. Because if you don't have the belief in it, I mean, the food business is hard. And we can't deny that in any way. It's... Wrecked.
I think you can see visibly, you can see the people that aren't passionate about their food business. And I don't even mean necessarily that there's any in town. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that you know when you're in one. You know that those people don't have the passion. Like, passion has to be there. It shows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it'll make up for a lot of your things you don't have or you haven't, established.
Absolutely.
Yet. So, and that would be like experience. Because it's going to take you twice as long as you think to do anything this business. So, having a bit of experience is always a good thing. So if you're thinking about a business, I would always look into other businesses that are in the same area.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, most people are really into sharing what they're doing.
Yeah.
So to get experience is quite easy if you want to reach out to people and say, hey, how do you do your business? Or can I talk to you about how you run your business?
Yeah.
If that's how you're thinking of going. Now, I recommend don't going in there and stealing all their ideas.
Yeah.
But like going in there and just getting a picture of how they do their business, how you think you could do your business better, or you could learn from their experiences.
Absolutely. And in that, like we had talked really briefly about mentors, and we both had some fantastic mentors, like no crossover there, but you've had some fantastic mentors. I've had some fantastic mentors. And it's funny because at some point, I've grown always thinking, when should I, like, I can't imagine sharing all my knowledge and secrets. I still need all this. Mm-hmm. And just in the last year or two, I've started to hit that point where I'm like, it's time for me to, like, I have an incredible body of knowledge. And I know that because I was a workaholic for so long. Not anymore. Like, not mincing words here. I know that I'm not anymore. But... yeah, I'm like, oh, it's time to help other people get there too, you know? Like, so I'm an open book. That's why I wanted to do this show too. It's like, anybody have any questions about any of this in detail? I'm happy to go into it.
Because we can tell you the things we did right.
And the things that we did wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's quite a few of those.
Yeah.
I think a big thing too with this is hard work.
Yeah.
I think.
Be prepared.
I think I love when people are like, oh, a restaurant, it sounds so romantic and it sounds like so much fun. And I love it.
Sounds like 14 hours a day for the first couple of years.
Yeah. And that's
what it sounds like to
me. Well, 14 hours on the floor and then you've got another 4 hours of doing paperwork in the back end of it. So it's not, this isn't easy.
Yeah.
It's not, if you're thinking about, hey, you know, I can turn around and sell this, you know, $1 food item for $20, ching ching. It's like, no, there's a lot of details that go into getting that product from there to there.
Yeah.
And lots of hands that get involved in it.
So. Absolutely. And everybody's getting paid.
Exactly. So. And everything breaks down. And there's always surprises around each door. And I know every time I get into something, it's always that much more work than I realize. And so,
of course.
Yeah. It's from everything. It's food.
Yeah.
Something goes wrong and you got to think on your feet and swip around and make it work. So,
yeah,
I guess another good thing to have when you're opening a business is money.
Yeah.
And figuring out
finances. I don't know. I'm of the other mind. I used to think there was no, like, I used to let that govern my decisions. I don't have the money for this. I don't have enough money for this. I don't have that. I don't have this. Like, I can't do that. And now I've come to realize that the best, I mean, so long as you've got a profitable idea, you have to have a good idea.
Yeah.
But use other people's money when you can. If you have the opportunity to use somebody else's money, do so and get there, because it will just get you there faster, right?
And there's lots of opportunity for money out there. There's lots of organizations.
I'm not saying just like banks or anything either. I'm saying, like, I mean, for instance, I bought the bar. I didn't, like, when I bought the, when, yeah, well, we're talking about, I'm sorry, I'm getting the look of the laughing, but when I bought the bar,
I didn't do anything.
Everybody's like, how, you know, a lot of people think that I got a bank loan or I, whatever. I mean, like, let's talk details. I did not get a loan for that. I had worked and worked and worked and worked, and I'd saved up $50,000, which I wanted to buy a restaurant and start a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And I was 27 years old. And I'd been working, like I said, like a dog to save that money. And the bar, I was running the bar for other people. They owned it. And something devastating happened in their family. And they said, we want to get out of this business. They owned another business that they were way more comfortable with owning, but they didn't want that anymore. And they just said, if we try to sell it on the market, we're not going to get nearly as much as you would pay for it, because you know its value. Mm-hmm. And how about we finance you? So, you know, like, we'll carry the loan. You just pay us back over time. And I was like, fantastic. And that came with the property.
Yeah.
And so I was excited. I was like, well, I'll put $50,000 down. Like, I'm so excited. And then I went to sign the papers, and the GST on the sale, because it included the property,
right,
was $47,000.
No, just the GST.
Just the GST.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, I have no money. And I did nothing. Like, I had no skin in the game all of a sudden, except I just signed over on, well, I think it was $650,000 in debt between the mortgage, the business, the everything. And so that was pretty daunting. But at the same time, you know, I had an out there. I had an opportunity to say nope and walk away. But I knew that I was making that place generate over $1 million a year in income. Mm-hmm. Wow. So I was pretty calm. I mean, not profit, just net or gross. And so I was pretty confident in my ability to pay that off in a timely manner.
Yeah.
So, but that's just it. Like, I mean, other people at 27 that are looking at $1 million business, and like, there's like, oh, there's no way I could own that. Yeah, there very much is. You just have to find the right situation. Mm-hmm. There's lots of situations out there like that.
Get it on paper.
Yeah, that's...
Oh, yeah.
Always get it on paper.
Yeah.
Always get everything on paper.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, that was...
If that's a failure in my life, is not getting things on paper.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Trusting people's word, yeah.
Oh, that's
that always happens. So that's a learning experience.
We want to talk about financing, maybe on... I'm trying to think of the financing on others. I mean, the food truck was purely based on... That's what I had at the time.
Yeah.
I had $10,000. That's it. Like, I'd been working. I was waiting for the sale of the bar to go through. I had $10,000. And I was like, I'm really tired of this. I had just started working at Atlas, which is how we met.
Right.
Actually, we met when you were a patron at the bar, but briefly. Mostly when you broke your leg there. Yeah, yeah. Your foot there.
There's busted jokes.
But yeah, so with that, it was just, I needed to move forward. I needed to get on to some, I needed to be, I knew I had the ambition and the drive to make my any money I had, make more money. And so I looked at what was feasible and within my means. And so I went and bought, I think it was cost me $8,000 to buy that cart. And then I converted it with friends and professionals. And that was fantastic. I started making, I mean, I have no qualms, whatever. I don't know what people are making now in food trucks. Mm-hmm. But that food truck, I put $10,000. I put $10,000 into starting that food truck, $5,000 into getting the first few gigs, and I was making $10,000 a weekend.
Yeah.
In really? I don't know what food trucks are making now, but it was $10,000 a weekend I was making for that first summer.
Yeah.
So,
but that's not something you made every day.
No, and that was, it took an entire week for me to prepare.
Yeah.
And it was the most taxing job on my body I've ever gone through.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not sustainable. But for quick, for if you, I mean, my suggestion, if people are still making that kind of money, I would do that for another summer for sure. I mean, in one summer, I made like $80,000-$90,000 and had
profit.
And had so much fun mm-hmm. because I just hooked up at concerts or set down my roots at concerts, not hooked up at concerts.
Down a different road.
Why is this going?
This is a family show, Darren.
I just did concerts. So I really enjoyed it. And everybody was in a really positive mood and atmosphere and vibe and what have you. Anyways, I'm just saying that there was a $1 million business and a $10,000 business. And, you know, just they're both worth my time. They were both worth my attention. And they both generated great money for me.
Mm-hmm.
But there's such a range and disparity of where, you know, what money you have to start with and what you can do and where you're going to go with things.
And there is money, and it's, you know, there's something about building a business. And most of the businesses that I know have been the most successful have been the ones that have started small and built. And they've added on. I'm going to say the two restaurants I've worked in lately, we have Atlas Cafe, started as a little small coffee shop, vegetarian restaurant. And they grew
I remember. Into this. I remember when it was that little weird restaurant around the corner next to the adult bookstore. And I remember that the friends that I went in with, this is like year one or year two. I think Atlas at year 25 now.
Mm, yeah.
26.
Yeah. 26 soon.
So in the first few years, a lot of my friends, we didn't know what to make of it. We were like, oh, it's like this little, you know, hippie food restaurant.
Yeah.
And that was its original sort of whatever. And I look at it now and I'm so proud of the years that I worked there because I think that restaurant is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a shining star of the valley for sure. But I mean, there you go. Is a restaurant that did exactly what you're talking about, where they slowly built and built and built every year building.
I'm going to say the same thing with locals.
Absolutely.
In it started off in this little small shop, a failed restaurant. Or we shouldn't say failed restaurant, but a restaurant guess it was failed. It didn't continue.
It didn't really go that well.
Yeah. Anyway, so then they opened it up and started as a small little place that was catering to the theme of keeping it as local as possible and keeping within season and stuff like that, to now that it's this in the old house and it's this massive restaurant that cooks way too many dinners does a really good job of it, right? Like it's amazing to see the transition and how it's gone from this little small restaurant to this amazing thing. So I think it's not always be in that rush to be the big number one guy everywhere. It's like take your turns.
Yeah,
you have to build slowly.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, you can do a food truck and you can make a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then you can get another food truck and make a little bit more money and you can build from there. And then you can start your own restaurant, right? There's lots of avenues to go.
Absolutely.
Same with farming. If you're into farming, like start off with one really good crop and then slowly don't plant everything.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be the guy who's got, I need a pepper. I need this. You know, like start.
And I mean, the reason for that isn't necessarily that you're overexposing yourself, right? It's not because, if you grow 10 things, they're all going to be mediocre. Although, you know, if you're just starting out, that might be the point, or that might be the case. Like you might want to just focus on being really good at making whatever,
mm-hmm.
but that comes back to branding too.
Yeah.
Because if you are just another person starting off as a farmer and you're competing against the vast vast sort of riches that we have from farms to choose from in the valley. If you don't distinguish yourself, you can't set yourself, like, if all of a sudden, you know, you're saying, well, I do this and I offer these products, and you're like, oh great, everybody else does, and I already have a relationship built with them. Mm-hmm. But if you come along and say, I grow peppers better than anyone else in the valley, I know that I need to try that, and there's a good chance that if I try it and I think that you're right, you're now in my head, you're the peppers guy. Mm-hmm. And that might be where you start your business from. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where you start. You could, that doesn't mean you're stuck there forever. It's just, that's the place that you broke into the market. Right. And so, yeah, I agree. I think that, and not only that, by getting really good at one thing, not only are you stuck in people's minds as being that person, but it gives you an opportunity to really learn the industry well in that, by doing that one thing the best.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we've talked about some of the keys to success.
Sure.
What are the hurdles? Because I want to start this one off, because I always say,
absolutely, jump in.
You know what? The restaurant business, I always say this one, the restaurant business would be the easiest business in the world if we got rid of the customers, the food, and the staff.
Absolutely.
We'd have nothing to worry about in the restaurant industry.
Yeah, absolutely.
So those to me are your three biggest hurdles.
Yeah. Well, okay, break that down a bit. Like, let's talk about what, if you said, if we could just lose the food, what's the hurdle in the food? What's the part of the food an issue?
Well, I mean, it's food. So yeah, it's something that goes off.
Yeah.
It's not something you can buy and put on a shelf and it's going to last forever. It's a constant moving part. Yeah. So you need to have it. If you're making it,
yeah, I don't think people realize that.
Yeah. And that's it.
When you spend $20,000 on food for the week, if you don't sell that by next week, you're done.
Yeah.
Like, it's so important to maintain.
Or if you have it go off or you do something wrong. Here's a perfect example. When I was in the ice cream shop and I was getting milk from cultured milk from Tree Island Yogurt.
Right.
So it's their milk. And so it had to be processed right away. Well, I got behind on the processing and I ended up curdling all the milk.
No.
So I spent, you know, $400 or $500 on milk that all went down the drain.
Right.
And so for a brand new business just opening, that's like,
yeah, that's huge.
That's huge. And it's completely was my fault.
Right.
And that I wasn't on my game and my timing was off and I just couldn't get to it all at one time.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And I realized that was one of our major issues. One of our major hurdles was making sure that our food was timed properly. And it's the same thing in any restaurant. You know, a lot of it is like we always say, if only I had that, you know, that crystal ball that I could tell how many customers are going to come in and how many are going to order Caesar salad tonight. Because if I knew that, I could buy 50 heads and I could serve 50 salads and everything would be great.
Right.
So,
but you don't. Yeah, that's why big menus are everybody's downfall, because some things are not going to sell on a given night.
Yeah.
And if every night you have things that are going in the garbage because you didn't sell them, regardless, even if they're all different every night, like, that's just not, you're not going to succeed.
It's the same if you're a farmer and you're you put all your money into carrots. And
also, I find too a food hurdle to be consistency, in that you have an unwritten agreement with your customer that if they come back, they want to be able to buy that thing again. Mm-hmm. And you know that that's one of the reasons that they're coming back, is because they enjoyed what they had this time and they want to know that they can come back and get it again. And the consistency is, there's so many variables of where that consistency cannot be consistent. Mm-hmm. Starting at the farm, that farm may have sold out where you always get this. And now you got to go to this one and it just tastes that much different. Or you have to go with a distributor for this week because all your local farms are out of that one and they might be sourcing from somewhere completely different.
Oh, totally.
And like your consistency at so many, you may have, the fridge may have adjusted in temperature by 2 degrees, which isn't affecting anything, but you know, certain vegetables sitting in there for 3 days, they have a little bit, maybe they're starting to like change in flavor a bit. Mm-hmm. I just think, that's one of the things that always makes me panic is, can I deliver the same consistent product every single time?
So what's the other one? Oh, what was I? Staff. That's another one. Keeping your staff happy, having staff.
Yeah.
Finding the right people.
Yeah.
Having productive people, having fast people.
And so one thing I would like to say, because I come from most of this about from a management background, I've managed many more places than I've actually worked as an employee. you have to be able to readily define what it is you're doing. You have to be able to define what it is you're selling to your customers. And you have to be able to define all of these things because you have to impart that on your staff. Because if your staff doesn't know, like, then, you know, you've all you've given yourself is a mediocre staff then. Yeah. But if you want to have a shining stars of staff, you have to be able to clearly define what it is you're trying to sell to people so that they can go and do that for you. And vice versa, they can come to you with the customer's needs and work with you on how to, you know.
It's getting your passion into them.
Yeah.
Your love for what you're doing and having them feel that safe. And having absolutely. That pride in what they're doing, right? Like that can be, that's a tricky thing.
Yeah.
Having managed in Atlas Cafe here in Courtenay and also managed for a restaurant in England that wasn't very consistent, this one wasn't very consistent, I can tell you that the key to consistency is exactly what the Atlas Cafe do, is to have a way of doing everything. Yeah. Recipes don't just exist with food in your domain, but recipes exist in staffing and the
codes of conduct.
Absolutely. Yeah. Codes of conduct. But anything from the simplest way is having the same, having the tomato ketchup go back to the same place every day.
Every time.
You know, in the restaurant in England that I managed, trying to bring them around to a level of consistency, which I'd learnt a previous time of working in Atlas, I was trying to say, hey, let's just put the ketchup in the same cupboard every time. And it was looked upon as, I don't know if I can say this, being a bit of a Nazi. I was
really?
Told. Yeah. And I was like, this isn't a new age thing. If a customer asks me for tomato ketchup, I don't want to have to go, right, well, this is a huge building. I've got to go and look for it.
Yeah.
You
know?
But you did. You had to look for it every single time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is that for everything. Atlas Cafe is known for being consistent.
Yeah.
You know, eating out is not as cheap as it was 20 years ago. And if you're going to eat out, it has to be good. There's very little forgiveness. There's so much competition.
Oh, yeah.
You want to be able to trust where you're going. And consistency is key. And it, in front of house as well as back of house, having a way of doing everything. What is the server? Mm-hmm. How are they going to greet you? What are they going to tell you about? Tonight's features are this, that, and the other, whilst making sure they can be themselves, so you're getting an authentic product. It's a mix,
I think there are two points tied together there too, in that consistency, for something to be consistent, you have to be able to define what it is. So I think that for anybody starting off in a food business, you have to define exactly what it is you're trying to make and define how you're going to produce it. You know, you have to define these, even if you're just defining them to yourself in the beginning.
Yeah.
Answer to yourself. And then now that you have a definite product, you have a definition, now you can be consistent to it. Or you have a definite way that you conduct yourself.
I like.
Now
I
we
like,
can be consistent to
I
it.
I have to talk about Trish at Locals. And she is, her thing is about standards.
Yeah.
And she comes from a nursing background, right?
Yeah.
So everything for her is checklist. Everything is written down because that way there's the standard.
Yeah.
And you know that you go through that list. And I know it's not something when you start a business, it's not something you don't know what those standards are.
Yeah.
You're building those. So you have to be flexible. But to have that list of this is how we do this, this is how we do it, and be flexible to change, but to say, hey, here's a basis. So
yeah.
You know, and it's in the kitchen. It's something that I'm really working on too, is like having that flexibility with my staff, but also having the standards, being like, this is the recipe and this is how we follow the recipe. And a lot of it, I realize, is like, it comes down to technique, because anyone can look at a recipe and throw all the ingredients in the pot, but you're going to get six different.
Absolutely. Flavors, yeah. Right? Yeah.
So it's having the technique of how we were doing one with spinach. Mm-hmm. We wilting some spinach for on top of everything. And we do it really slow with the garlic and the butter to really infuse that flavor into the butter. Because if you do it too fast, you burn the butter or you burn the garlic. So if you do it really slow, that beautiful garlic flavor leaches out. But then we wilt the spinach and everyone would just have it really low and slowly. So we would cook all the spinach to death. Whereas like crank it up, throw that spinach in as fast as possible, cook it as fast as possible, and then we cool it down. We throw it on a sheet pan to cool down as fast as possible, and it keeps that brilliant green.
Yeah.
And it lasts a little bit longer.
Yeah. You don't want that mush. You want that.
Yeah. And it's just those little techniques that you do just to make your dish that much nicer. So, and that follows all the way through your entire business.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So there we go. There's, you know, the importance of define what you want to do and then stay consistent to it.
And then another ring is customers.
Yeah.
Like we want two, three. Three is a customer. Yeah. And the customer is always right.
You know, I worked at a place called Gourmet by the Sea. I worked there for 5 years. And up until then, I'd worked in many other places. And when I worked there, his motto was the customer is occasionally right. and if they're not, it's your job to educate them. And so that was the sort of the MO of the restaurant. It was never walked around like we were high and mighty, but we realized that a lot of the people that were coming to us may have been misinformed, ill-informed, not informed at all. And those were opportunities to educate the customer.
Right.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. The customer is always right. I actually, in a previous life, spent a college course I was doing learning about what the customer is always right actually means. And it's actually pretty much as you say. It actually, customer is always right is feedback. So if the customer thinks this, then you are guiding them through an experience and you have led them to this.
Right.
It's a controlled environment. You can put them in a certain building, provide them with a certain food and a certain service, and they will come to a natural conclusion. And you have done that. So if they have given you this bit of feedback, you are the ones that control the levers to make them think other things.
Right.
So if they have, I mean, you name it, it's your fault because you have the ability to change it. The customer is always right. If that's their feedback, you have led them to believe that. And it's quite empowering because you can change their opinion if you do things differently.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, there was a time from the 80s to about, I would say the mid 90s, at least that I was seeing, where people were interpreting, and I mean generally the customer was interpreting the mantra, customer is always right, to mean, I didn't enjoy that, so I'm not paying for it.
Right.
Or that's not a carrot to me. Carrots to me are always orange. Or, you know, and they were hard lines that certain people were digging their heels in about personal opinions or personal choices or personal what have you. That's not what the customer is always right means. When people are using that term, or I think that it was being misinterpreted in some way. I think that if you're going to stick by that mantra of the customer is always right, the definition you provided, which is the, I understand that you have an issue or concern or what have you, I have the opportunity to change that. That is where the customer is always right.
Yeah. And it's very empowering because in the example you just gave with the carrots being wrong or I don't want to pay for this, then get a better type of customer.
Yeah.
It's the answer.
Yeah.
Get a better type of customer or make it so they're paying first or make it so they can't have a refund. If it's getting to the point where they are going to violate the agreement, whereas you pay them for a service, then get a better customer or get them to agree so they can't complain. But and that's something, there's always an answer.
Yeah, and that's something I definitely see forming now is, you know, we've come to an era of informed customers, thankfully.
Mm.
And I think... Yeah, I think you'll see certain ways it goes the other way where certain businesses, instead of bending over backwards to get anybody through their door, they're starting to become a little more discerning and say, we don't, you know, like we're not going to accommodate people that are disruptive to our environment or disruptive to what we're doing. Or if you've exhibited that nothing's going to make you happy, then why am I going to waste all this effort and energy and time trying to make you happy when I can just be better accommodating to the people that are here, you know what I mean? Over here on the other side. So
I'd like to add to that. The one thing that I have learned is be very careful to the customer who says, you know what you should do?
Yeah.
Because a you know what you should do customer is usually someone who is just throwing something out there. Or, you know what I really like?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to say that, but they're the only one who's ever going to come in and buy that.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to be very careful.
Yeah.
You have to be very careful when customers you down the wrong route.
Yeah. It's not even customers. It's friends. It's associates. It's, I get that all the time where people are like, you should try this or you should do that. You, whatever. And
you know, it'd be really good on your menu.
Yeah.
This. And it's like, okay, yeah. And
I will. Yeah. I'll always take those things in and process them myself and say, do they fit with what I'm doing? Are they like, is this, I guess when I could go long winded here, and I'm just saying that I think that just make sure it's true to what you want to do, mm-hmm. and don't get caught up in everybody else's opinions. Because you're going to get millions of them.
Yeah, everyone's going to have a better idea for you. I remember, opening the ice cream shop and, you know, like in the winter.
I feel
and
bad for
people
you.
Coming in.
Just knowing.
And just literally, like, people going, like, do you know what you're doing? Like, I had this one woman who basically stood there and told me I was going to fail.
Wow.
And that I didn't know what I was doing. And I was like, I've been doing this a lot of years.
Yeah.
Like, I know what I'm doing.
And yeah.
I did build a successful business.
Yeah.
I just took some of the punishment in my relationship to do it.
So yeah.
That was a cost.
Yeah.
That's a definite cost that most people don't know about.
Is that is.
The personal cost that you can easily, and I've done it several times, wrecked relationships because of my passion for food.
Yeah. And the commitments that you make to it.
Yeah.
I mean, you become so committed to succeeding that you know that it can't be done in less hours in the day. And so many days mean you're not with that other person in your life. And
you put those blinders on
and
you have different ideas and different directions and
you
don't meet in the middle. And so that's something to definitely take into account going into the food industry.
Yeah, absolutely. Know that the stats are really high that couples don't generally make it through.
And that's in all businesses.
Yeah.
It's not just the food business,
but
being a couple in a business is definitely a hard part. Sorry to turn that to a little bit of a downer on there.
I mean, honestly, this is a subject that I think you and I could both talk about for hours. And I think that maybe rather than just go rambling on for hours, why don't we hear from everybody about what they want to hear more about?
That's a good idea. There's lots of things. There's a few things we didn't even touch on that we can come back on. It's like location permits.
Yeah.
Let's get into
all the nuts and bolts next time, like the actual, like the physical stuff.
Right. We can make this a two-parter.
Sure.
So we can get into talking about some of the, actually, now that you've thought of your idea and you've come up with your dream.
Yeah.
What direction do you go with it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, seriously, if you want to talk more about financing or, how do you decide on good products, whatever floats your boat, let us know. And we'll talk more about that in the next episode.
And if we don't know it, we know the people who do know about it.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the joys of us being in this industry is that we have made some really good connections with a lot of people over the years.
Well, with Edible Valley, we've made some fantastic connections over the years. So,
and it's actually been fun to look back. And this is something if you're, mm-hmm. I think we're going to start releasing some old episodes every so often.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Just recleaning them up a little bit, you know, doing a little editing and putting the new intro on it and then giving some listen. And it's really interesting to look back at like, how businesses in our community have grown and how they've changed and how they have this idea. Actually, there's probably a bunch of places that we talked to that don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
They went off in another direction.
There's a few that they were just at their starting stage and look at how successful they are now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it'd be a fun little go back over. And I think that's what I was talking about, becoming a food entrepreneur.
Yeah. Perfect. Okay. Well, I mean, I really enjoyed this episode. I think, again, this is talking in a topic that I think that I have a lot to offer. So I'm trying my best to just keep myself contained and not keep going, rambling on. But thanks for joining us, everybody.
Yeah.
Will?
Yeah, absolutely. I really enjoyed that. It's nice to be back.
To be back. And hopefully we can keep this up at a more reasonable pace for ourselves. All right. Well, thanks for listening to another episode of the Edible Valley Podcast. And don't forget, if there's something you want to learn about entrepreneurship in the food industry, let us know, and you can email us at edibleValley@gmail.com. All right,
and that wraps up another episode of the Edible Valley Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and a special thanks goes to the local businesses that help support our podcast. They make it possible for us to showcase your local food community. We'd love you to follow us on your preferred social media at Edible Valley, where you can check out our blog, find recipes and tips, behind the scenes, and of course keep a lookout for where we are going to turn up next in your Edible Valley.
And over scenery and stuff like that. I quite often I'll have that one. And they'll just have some mindless, like, quiet music playing to it, you know? And I'm like, okay, that's cool, I can do this.
The mindless stuff is really good. Mm-hmm. Anything, even like coffee shop backgrounds.
Yes.
You have our people that study that are really good at it. You know, the Bob Pomodoro.
And this has been an Edible Valley production.